Hi, friends. And let's continue now. Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 1, Section 1, Part 8, Video Commentary. Today is the 25th of August, and we're on page 82. This is program number 35. D.K., for our little segue here, has laid out certain objectives that he wants us to to accomplish. The individual objective, I'm taking them backwards here, the general group objective, the future objective of these ashramic groups, and then the main present objective. And you can reread those concerning integration, telepathic rapport, increasing the shift to consciousness on the etheric plane, and preparation for group initiation. Now I took them in the proper order. Okay. So anyway, what does he say here? In closing, he says, the attainment of these objectives will involve clear vision and a keen and intelligent understanding. It will require the steady and conscious intensification of group love and group interplay. So not just the keen vision and intelligent understanding, but group love and group interplay. He goes on to say, it will lead all disciples to live lives full of wise purpose and planned spiritual objectives, and at the same time, the service rendered will assume a definite and an automatic technique of expression. So let me say that these are very promising possibilities. They are not immediately with us, but he was certainly training his groups for future incarnations. Maybe I would suspect this coming incarnation, where they can take up the threads of their previous work, as he is giving out his third installment of bridging treatises, leading to the knowledge of the New Age, the ascertained knowledge of the New Age. So here we are. I never know how long we're going to have a chance to work, but here's page 82, and there are 20 pages left in this section one of this magnetic book, Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 1. I don't think we can successfully pick up Volume 2 and get the most out of it unless we have really read Volume 1, the beginning and ending sections, and maybe something about the letters to the disciples themselves. Okay. So here is DK's further statement in program number 35. You might here ask me if there is one single mode or means whereby a disciple can begin to approximate this seemingly impossible goal. Well, I have to say that, you know, DK knows how it will seem to us at first. How can we do all this? We might ask ourselves. How can we? Okay, but he says, going on, I would reply, by the steady practice of impersonality with its subsidiary attitude of indifference, let's call it, shall we, divine indifference, if possible, and link it to that technique which is found in the Glamour book, the technique of indifference with its dispersive quality. So he says, I'm repeating here, by the steady practice of impersonality with its subsidiary attitude of indifference, where personal desires, contacts, and goals are concerned. So may I say, we don't let ourselves be dissuaded or stopped by distressing conditions which may arise in relation to our personality desires and their fulfillment and our contacts, or our apparent inability to fulfill our goals as rapidly as we might have hoped. DK goes on, such an impersonality is little understood. And may I say with that, I agree with him. You know, I'm always, in my own case, trying to understand what is this impersonality and how really to cultivate it. So, repeating what he says here, such an impersonality is little understood, and even when cultivated by well-intentioned aspirants, has a selfish basis. Well, let us say DK certainly sees through our motives, and we may fool ourselves into thinking, well, now I have it, but lurking behind this having are some degrees of selfishness which we have not accounted for. So he advises, going on, ponder on this and endeavor to achieve impersonality through self-forgetfulness and through the decentralization of the focus of consciousness from the personality, where it is usually centered, into the living, loving soul. He reminds us, doesn't he, frequently, since impersonality is difficult to understand and frequently filled with the errors that come of using the first ray type of often cold impersonality, since it is subject to those errors, the kind of impersonality that DK would like to see us cultivate is not easily understood, and he has to repeat what it is in various ways, which of course he does do. As a good teacher, a master teacher would. And here is that, I have to make this a little bolder, the subsidiary attitude of indifference where these other factors involved in impersonality are to be found. We can pause there for a minute and ask ourselves whether we do have the perspective of the soul. As we look on at our own development, or maybe unsatisfactory lack of development, so we think, or look on at our group functioning. Yes, how can we change our focus from the consciousness of the personality, and note, please, where it is usually centered, he says. It's as if we just don't know any better, know any different. Into the living, loving soul. And may I say that we will see others as newly alive when it is focused there, our consciousness there, and we will have a loving attitude towards many that we may have seen only in personality terms, and increasingly a kind of patriotism which is not based on illusions but on the true love of our fellow countrymen and women, and eventually an attitude that really wants to advance the spiritual welfare of others. Okay, so he goes on. You know, I just have to say he knows he's giving us a lot. And maybe he wonders what use we will make of this gift, but perhaps a burdensome gift when we think with sincerity of all we have to assimilate. He's realistic. Well, anyway, more practical advice coming here from the Master. There are four things which frequently hold back a group of disciples from achievement of satisfactory work. Now, we might as well be acquainted with what they are, or shall we say, reacquainted. Because in various ways, may I say, he repeats some similar ideas, but usually from a different point of view each time. He frequently tells us, well, no use to repeat what is already written, but then he does give it to us often in a new form. So what are these four things that frequently hold us back? Well, number one, lack of vision, incident to lack of mental keenness. If I may say, let's just say that DK certainly is training us in mental keenness. Is there another master at our present time, well, or maybe very few, who are so mentally alert, sharp, as he is? All right, so lack of vision, incident to lack of mental keenness. A sharp mental focus is required. And he has been training us in this, lo, these many years. His writings demand it, don't they? Then, personal glamour. And this involves the astral plane. He says, we exaggerate, we minimize, we don't see things truly in proportion. We want that which will not lead us anywhere spiritually and which will block our vision of the truth. And we've been in that condition for a long time. And then, number three, individual problems involving a pronounced preoccupation upon the physical plane with its circumstances and difficulties in this most difficult of worlds. Well, what does he mean by that? Maybe that of the worlds of the personality, this etheric physical realm is to be considered the most difficult, or simply that we're living through very difficult times and they're not getting any easier. Right now, here it is, the year 2021. Well, we can't ever say that Sanat Kumara has lost patience with the way human beings are conducting their affairs, but he certainly is pressing the issue. So it seems, so the truer spiritual values will be adopted by us when if the issues had not been pressed, we could go on with our miserable, selfish, unsharing, warlike, and even dirty ways of behaving towards each other. All of that has to be cleaned up, doesn't it, before we can enter the Aquarian age in any reasonable manner. And then inertia, or slow reactions to the imparted teaching and to the presented opportunity. Tamas, in other words, right? We just don't take timely advantage of what is given in a time when timely response is really required. So, you know, let's just look at it here and see what the condition is. It's not promising, but then again, it's not the only condition either, because people are realizing the opportunity, and they are moving on. So a battle is on between the angel of the presence, who knows that the time is short when we must prove ourselves, and the dweller on the threshold that wants to keep things just as they have been. And that is a backward walking into old forms of behavior which have led to present problems anyway. I'm trying to remember, there was a wonderful video of a Native American elder, and he had a beautiful name, which unfortunately I can't remember. But he showed a picture of a man walking forward, and that same man walking backwards. And there is that reactionary element within humanity. I could hardly call it conservative, because in the word conservative, positive possibilities can be found, as in, we wish to conserve that which has been of value, as the fourth ray will often do in its bridging possibilities, not throwing out the baby with the bathwater, as this story goes. But reactionary, yes. Filled with reaction against impending possibilities. Yeah. That is an issue. And millions are given to it, and as we have determined, largely out of fear of the new possibilities. So look, are we held back here? Because of lack of vision or group glamour or our own individual problems, and maybe the group will have problems too. Not just our own, because the group certainly does have a personality, and then refusal, we might say, or maybe it's just inability to respond promptly to that which is offered as possibility. So, these are the things that hold us back in our groups. And certainly we have to know about them so we can obviate the problem. Now, D.K. goes on, a deep reflection upon the urgency of the times and a sympathetic recognition of the unhappy plight of humanity are much needed by many disciples and aspirants in the world today, particularly by those who are not close to the world situation, but who are looking at it from a distance. It is so simple to give a facile, you know what we mean there, just it rolls off the tongue easily, but it doesn't mean much. It is so simple to give a facile expression of sympathy, but at the same time to avoid too great an expenditure of energy in service and too intense an effort to be of assistance. Well, that's it. And every one of us can answer, do we talk a good game about our sympathy? I was thinking, I realize that, you know, I'm somewhat caught in time here, because if you're listening to this, it may be years after the events that I might talk about, but here are these thousands of people being evacuated from Afghanistan because they have helped the United States build up a more modern civilization there, and they're being jammed into cargo planes. I saw one cargo plane with more than 600 people in it, you know, barely room to breathe. And some people were dying as they tried to enter the airport because they were crushed against some kind of enclosure. Other people were, I don't know what was in their mind, but grabbing onto planes as they were taking off and then falling from the planes once the planes were airborne. Just a horrible situation involving honor, loyalty, commitment to helpers, politics, of course. That is how things appear to be, you know, the optics of situations. And maybe so many in the world saying, isn't that horrible? But then doing what about it? There was a first-rate disciple, I think, in England during the Second World War, and D.K. chided her somewhat for not doing what she otherwise might to really help the war effort on the ground. And the same kind of thing is going on for us. You know, the very people that wanted the rescue of these most unfortunate, more progressive Afghanistanis caught in the middle, they don't want them to come to the country. They don't want to take them in. It's a hypocrisy, of course. So when we give sympathy, it has to be accompanied by right action. And we have to feel into the deep fear and unhappiness of many who might not only lose their lives, but lose the lives of their family under harsh and barbaric treatment. All right, well, it's something to consider. DK goes on and says, the hallmark of the pledged disciple and a quality which should increasingly dominate his life is the capacity to identify himself with the part or with the whole, as seems needed at any particular time. And probably some of you know that I oftentimes say, not only identify with the part or with the whole, but as the part or as the whole. It gives a new perspective about the nature of our identity. The pledged disciple is not only the accepting disciple who has agreed that, yes, these things sound reasonable and I accept them, but is one who has made a promise, and that promise is leading up to the state of accepted discipleship. So, this wider type of identification is to be cultivated. He says, going on, such an attitude involves a comprehensive sweep of love, and this leads to inclusiveness and to the pledging of the life service to the greatest number and to the most needy. That's, may I say that it's interesting that comprehensive sweep of love. Maybe some of us have experienced that. And then, of course, the greatest good of the greatest number, the pledging of the life service to the greatest number and to the most needy. Maybe love can surprise us. We try, maybe deliberately, to love, following the esoteric methods, and then maybe suddenly some kind of comprehensive love sweeps over us. And that would be as a result of achieving actual soul consciousness rather than theoretical soul consciousness. This is something, though, preliminary at which we have to work. DK goes on and says, if I were asked to specify the outstanding fault of the majority of groups of disciples at this time, I would say that it is the expression of the wrong type, wrong kind of indifference, leading to an almost immovable preoccupation with their personal ideas and undertakings. And these, says the Tibetan, militate against the group integration and tend to block the work. The expression of the wrong type of indifference and a kind of immovability. So that in fact we're not really thinking about the others at all. We're simply thinking about our own personal point of view, or our personal ideas, as he says, and undertakings. So this has got to be important, what he says here, because he really tells us the outstanding fault of the majority of groups of disciples at this time. When you see a word or combination of words such as outstanding fault, you are given a moment to pause. So we've made traps for ourselves, and we insist on remaining within those traps, even though better ways are offered to us. So obviously you will want to check whether you are participating in this outstanding fault. The wrong kind of indifference. What will this lead to? It will lead to not really caring about the need of the people or the groups with whom one is engaged. One will just hold one's own position of fixed, immovable, almost fixed, almost immovable interest or preoccupation. Well, every once in a while, the Tibetan will say something that just demands attention. I mean, if we are stopping ourselves by certain group habits, and I suppose personal habits, we absolutely want to know what they are. The expression of the wrong kind of indifference. And that's the thing I was talking about a little earlier when I was mentioning the colder kind of indifference, where we just don't allow ourselves to be moved by anything that may be happening in those that we intend to help, because we don't consider meeting their need important. We just follow on with our own particular interest. Okay, now dealing with the disciples' need here. Just trying to see. It's obviously not a program that is to be immediately completed. You know, entertaining all these things. No. So he says, one of the things, he says, most needed by every disciple is to apply the teaching given to the idea of promoting and increasing their world service, thus rendering practical and effective in their environment the knowledge that has been imparted and the situation to which they have been subjected. And this is, he says, a suggestion to which I would have you pay real attention. Oh, I don't know how many times he seems to have repeated this idea. apply what you know. Apply the teaching given increasingly to your world service. Otherwise, this hiatus will exist between what we know, but only theoretically, and something on the physical plane that could be changed for the better if we would somehow put into action what we appear to know theoretically. Now, the question would come up, do we really know anything if we know it only theoretically? So pause just for a moment and review your the degree of your practical application. Of all that Master DK has actually given you, given us, he says, I would like also at this point to bring to your attention the fact that an accepted disciple is not in reality one who has been accepted by a master for training. Now, maybe this is going to reverse our opinions and run contrary to some of the things that we think the Master has been saying. He's telling us, in going on, that this is the distortion of a true idea which, in its progress from the mental plane to the physical, has achieved a complete reversal or distortion. And we know, don't we, that there is such a thing that we might call the astral inversion. Inversion, which turns the truth upside down. And inclines those who pass through that plane and are still subject to glamour to accept as true what is the reversal of that which is true. So here is a still better understanding of what an accepted disciple really is. And maybe we should always keep this particular page in mind when we are inclined to define accepted discipleship in a more customary but erroneous manner. So it seems that what he's calling the accepted disciple is even more the accepting disciple. So, an accepted disciple is one who, number one, has accepted the fact of the hierarchy with its implications of loyalty and cooperation, which that acceptance involves. I guess there are many ways to accept the fact of hierarchy, and some of them are glib and superficial. And not based on experience at all. An accepted disciple is one who has accepted the fact that all souls are one, and who has therefore, and may I say this stage follows, accepting this, that all souls are one, and has therefore, as he goes on, pledged himself to seek expression as a soul. The service to be rendered is the awakening and stimulation of all souls contacted. And that's very straightforward and filled with understanding. All souls are one. I accept this. I pledge myself to seek expression as a soul, and my task is the awakening and stimulation of all souls contacted. Now, just, you know, ask yourself if you have made these acceptances. See, what we're looking at here is the bridge between the accepting disciple and the accepted disciple. Sometimes they are kept relatively distinct. And DK has said or implied that at the stage of accepted discipleship, he does take over a closer observation of the disciple. And as he is doing with the groups he has been gathering, offers them some degree of training, but first must come their acceptances. Okay, what else is an accepted disciple? And number three, the accepted disciple has, says DK, accepted the occult technique of service. His service to humanity determines all his activities and subordinates his personality to the need of the time. Now, let me just say that's not a subordination to what might be interesting at some other time. There are immediate immediate needs and the accepting disciple, who is becoming the accepted disciple, is increasingly aware of how he may serve occultly, and the press of personality needs, and which one of us does not have them, that press is subordinated to the wider need of the time. And DK tells us, note that phrase. Cultivate insight and a fluid response to the immediate need, and not a sensitive reaction to the to the distant goal. That would be an illusion, wouldn't it? If we're always reacting to the possibilities of the distant goal and overlooking what has to be done now. So, occult technique in service is accepted, that all souls are one is accepted, and what else? The fact of the hierarchy. We need to repeat to ourselves, the members of the spiritual hierarchy are here. They are indeed present as part of the presence. It seems a simple thing to say that we might pledge ourselves to seek expression as a soul. But it is not a simple matter, and there's so many ways that if we would catch ourselves, we find ourselves expressing otherwise. And here's the last one, I guess, of the ones he lists, anyway. An accepted disciple has accepted the plan as indicated by the teachers of the race. He seeks to understand the nature of that plan and to facilitate its manifestation. So these are all the things that an accepted disciple will do because of what he has accepted. From what? From his, as a result of his experience, perhaps? He has come far enough on the path to not reject. I've been thinking about a much lower turn of the spiral. And I've seen some of those millions of people who believe in the lies that are being told by ambitious politicians, and the superficiality of their thought, the thoughtlessness, the naive acceptance of what is said without thinking through what is said is just breathtaking. You begin to realize that if sufficient numbers of people begin to adopt these modes of thoughtlessness, we will have a very serious situation which loses touch with reality. Now, the accepting disciple is accepting that which has a basis in reality, and is using esoteric methods to confirm reality over conspiracy theories and lies and all those other sources of misinformation. And the testing time is upon us now. So maybe then we have that bridge between the accepting disciple and the accepted disciple. And of course, when these acceptances are in place, the master can, as he has done for the students he has gathered, he can then do something with them, teach them in a way that is in a superior mode to what his advanced students might be able to impart to them. In other words, I'm saying a chela might be a chela in the light for a while, and report might be made to the master by a senior interior disciple regarding how that more outwardly focused disciple is doing, but it's not the same as being written to directly by the master teacher. Now, going on a bit more, just a few pages is all we can really attempt to do under these circumstances. Other points of a more individual nature could be enumerated, he says, but I would have you lay the emphasis upon the acceptances which have or should have motivated your attitude. And I would ask you not to emphasize so unduly in your private thoughts this idea of being accepted by a master. Let's just say it's even dangerous to it's dangerous to harbor within oneself this special status of being accepted by the master. It takes the responsibility away from us and our acceptances and somehow places it on the master. That is not what he is intending for us to do. So just pause for a minute. Do you, in your acceptances, accept the fact of the hierarchy? Do you accept the fact of the hierarchy? I know many people who don't. And even if they say they do, they don't in their heart of hearts really accept. Do you accept the fact that all souls are one? And what does that mean? He tells us, no longer use the thought, my soul and thine. Rule 5 in Rays and the Initiations. Do you accept the occult technique of service and find that it is a real way to serve and an effective way? And do you serve as needed in the moment? And do you accept the divine plan, such as you may know it? Now, if we do accept these important acceptances, we are likely, with justification, over time, to be able to call ourselves accepted disciples. And we may remember that when we studied the last part of this book, he did offer to us verifications or methods of verification whereby we might know that we are accepted disciples. But anyway, Master D.K. would have us place the emphasis upon our acceptances, and not whether the Master has deemed us so worthy that he looks down from his high position and says, yes, I accept you. So, if we entertain too much this idea of accepted by a Master, there are consequences, and Master D.K. tells us what they might be. Accepted by a Master. Okay. He says, this thought and its teaching may, by many esoteric groups, has been productive of much error, much misunderstanding, much pain, and much disillusionment. A disciple is trained in certain important matters and not in his relation to a master. And I think, friends, because I do have more coming up tonight that I'm going to call this program to a halt at this point, and then enter into it later if I possibly can. And he's talking about the harm that may be caused when you consider yourself accepted by the Master and not as an accepting disciple. So this has taken us to page 84. And let's see, 82, 84. Yeah. Just a few pages. And then later, if time allows, we'll see if I can go on any further. This is program number 35, filled with important information about what holds a group back and what holds the individual disciple back. And it has linked the accepting disciple to the accepted disciple. So let me just put this in here. Program 35 up to page 84, where we can begin when next we have the opportunity. And it will be program 36. And I, as usual, when I don't know when I'll be able to continue, I put a couple of X's there. So it'll be on the factors of importance to the disciple. That's what our next work will be. So, meanwhile, Tuya and I wish you the very best, and the whole communications team, that you can absorb these thoughts. And as DK points out in this particular episode, apply them. He's really definitely saying, this is so important, apply what I give you. And do it oftentimes by occult methods. So here I just want to stop at the factors of importance to a disciple. So lots of love, many blessings, and we will be back when it is possible. Bye for now.